welcome, a bit late to the February 1st, 2001 edition of Bathurst Spears Broadside, Civil Rights on the Streets, here in beautiful, gentrified Santa Cruz. Lots of stuff coming up in the next 2 hours. Stay with us.
I'm on the line with Jack Tafari of the infamous Camp Dignity up in Portland, Oregon. Hi, Jack.
Hell no, we're not infamous. We're just famous.
Well, oh, fine.
We're famous, you know.
Yeah, so you,
famous
you got...
up in card parades, you know.
Well, you are at least a month old up there. How old are you now?
We're getting on for about a month and a half.
Huh.
Month and a half old, you know.
And this is a group of people who are... in motion because the police keep rolling them down the road. What's happened up there?
Well, what's happened is, we start out, we're on about our fifth site now. But what happened was, strategically, we picked it out to do it, you know, just before Christmas, when people have love in their hearts, and when the weather was turning. So strategically, we did it that way, and tactically, they escalate until finally on site 4 we move up to River Place and we have the tents of the poor and the condos of the rich side by side and door by door. So by then the city negotiate a bit, you know, so like we pitch the tents of Joshua and we circle Jericho, you know, going around and around.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly cracks start appearing in Jericho walls, you know.
Well, that's good. So the city, this is a group of folks who've been fighting the, you're looking for affordable housing and other alternatives, but you...
Well, what we're trying to do is we housed ourselves, basically.
Right.
It was people from the doorways of Morrison Street. There were three of us from the doorways of Morrison Street, a lot of people from a parking lot down on Gleason Street. And John Reese and I, were living under the Broadway Bridge in a parking space by the post office. Now, John Reese is a veteran. John Reese served his country. And John Reese had the camping ban was overturned on the 27th of September.
Right.
In mid-October, John Reese has diabetes, and he lost his another leg. He lost one fighting for his country and all that, right? And he lost his other leg to diabetes in October, right? And we lived in a parking lot last summer. And then with the dissolution of the parking lot, John moved under the Broadway Bridge. Well, he had an operation, and he lost his leg in October, and 4 days later, he was back under the Broadway Bridge, and that is not right. That's not right at all. You know, so... we're Camp Dignity, and I talk a lot for Camp Dignity, but every voice is important there. We have our own traditions now. We pass around an eagle feather because every single voice is important. And John likes to joke around that he's 6'2" and he's 2 foot short, right? But there is no least one among us because John protects us. John keeps the police from coming down and beating us all up, right? And John is our Grand Marshal for our parades. He's led every one of our famous parades from his wheelchair.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so he leads our shopping cart parades.
So the sleeping ban, or I should say the whole camping ordinance, which was ruled unconstitutional by Gallagher has still not been respected. That ruling is not respected by Portland police, who continue to ticket and harass people in Portland?
Well, what's happening is Mayor Katz is trying to say that it pertains to one case, the Wicks case, but that's not true. I mean, you know, I'm not a lawyer, right? I'm just a street guy. And what's happening is she's trying to say it pertains only to the Wicks case. But actually, you know, we have a good piece of legislation behind us, and it's called the Constitution of the United States, because the Gallagher decision ruled that, you know, depriving people of the right to roll out their bedding and to camp and to sleep came up to cruel and unusual punishment, right?
For a status, right, not for a crime.
Because we're discriminated against on account of our status and condition, mm-hmm. right? You know, we're homeless, right? So it's basically a human rights issue. You know, dignity is about, it's not just about the dignity of homeless people, it's about human dignity, period.
Mm-hmm. How many homeless people do you estimate are in Portland outside tonight?
There are, according to Rob Justice at Join, there are between 2,000 and 3,000 sleeping out on any given night, and this is a small town, I mean a small city,
mm-hmm.
you know? So there are 2,000 to 3,000 every night. You know, there are 361 shelter beds. When the mission overflow, the rescue mission and the Salvation Army overflows open up, there are 200 more spaces, so that's... let's see, it's about 561 spaces. And, you know, people are hiding out in the weeds and stuff. So we just come out of the weeds, you know, come out of the tree line, come down into the fields and popped up our tents. You know, so that's what we're doing.
So Camp Dignity began in January or in December?
December 16th.
And you have moved so far to 5 different locations?
This is our 5th location, yeah. We moved to one land. Our site selection wasn't very good because we didn't know that the NATO family, they're big realtors around here, they own a lot of property. They just bought the land a month before. We thought it was public land. It was actually private land by the Broadway Bridge. So we moved over to ODOT land, and so that's Oregon Department of Transport land. And Sergeant Powell, you know, who kind of liaises with us at the moment, came and told us, well, you have till the day after Christmas. And, you know, that's your Christmas present, right? You know, we're not going to stress you that much. That's your Christmas present, you know, and then we're going to chase you away. So we formed up our...
constitutional rights for one day.
Yeah, you know, so we had about 5 days there. So we formed up our shopping carts and... Jamie, our elder, he's 75. He lived in a cardboard condo on Morrison Street before. And he's got bad circulation in his legs and everything. And John led our parade, and we had everybody. We had black, white, Native American in the crew, right? We had young and old and men and women. We had all different creeds, you know, Christian, Muslim, Rasta, Native American spiritual beliefs. We have all different kinds of things. That's our strength. Our strength is in our diversity, but our unity in diversity. Our unity in diversity.
How many people are you?
We're about 35 now.
And is it pretty much the same group throughout, or have you kind of, you know, have you alternated in and out?
Yeah, there's been some change. There's been some change. Original Soldier Virus is down in San Francisco at the moment. She'll be back for a couple of weeks. And some people have changed over. You know, it's a floating crew, but there's still the core, the original soldiers.
How are the media treating you?
Pretty well. It's not bad. You know, we're not getting too much bad publicity. They're out there every day, you know.
And police are giving you at least 24-hour notice before moving you on, per Oregon law?
Well, Sergeant Powell came by the other day with the ATVs, the all-terrain vehicles, you know, with a couple of his friends from the police force, you know. And they came by, and I kind of went down and fielded them. I said, you know, Sergeant Powell, I thought you were on parade. I said, we like shopping carts for our parades, you know. I see you on ATVs. I thought you were going to keep going. And he was just not quite up to page, you know, what's going on. Basically, we kind of cut a deal, right, and we get to stay a bit longer. We got, I introduced him to Reverend Williams, who's helping us now. There's a big fundraiser coming up for us soon. And Reverend Williams, he's a preacher, and he's very good, very good. Very black, like Marcus Mosiah Garvey, and kind of like Tim, one of our original soldiers, very black of complexion, you know? And Reverend Williams spoke to Sergeant Powell and just kind of brought him up to date, you know, about Senator Shields. And
well, bring us up to date. What is happening with your negotiation?
What's happened is we basically cut a deal, and we can stay for a little time where we are now. And at the negotiations, I told them when we got to River Place, you know, the uptown, you know, when we were in a very ritzy neighborhood, you know. When we went down to talk in City Hall, you know, to the commissioner, I told the commissioner that, you know, the troops were tired. We had old people and we had invalids in the crew. Right, so, you know, the troops need to rest for a while, so we wanted basically a week where we were, and then we wanted some better ground, because it was not good ground where we were. You know, it would be like a mud bath with some heavy rain. So we wanted some good ground, and I told them basically, well, our architect, Mark Lakeman from City Repair, began talking about what we were trying to build, and I told Commissioner Stan that basically you can't build on a foundation of sinking sand, you know, and the foundation we're trying to build on is based on love and respect for ourselves and for each other, and we needed some good ground, and we needed a curb around it, you know, so we could contain our growth, you know, and remain a village and not spin out and become a mighty, mighty city, because see, we could grow like down under the bridge and around the corner and around the bend, because we've tapped into a huge need, right? And basically what we've done is solve the housing problem, you know, our own housing problem ourselves. And
what's the weather been like, Jack? I know that, for example, I spoke a couple days ago with Catherine Rhodes in Providence, Rhode Island, who conducted a two-week tent city in front of their city hall. But the temperatures went down to 3 degrees and zero, and they just, you know, people were getting pneumonia. It was, and so they had to cancel it. Portland, of course, has more seasonable temperatures, but you've been getting a lot of rain.
Well, we had some terrible wind the other day, and we're setting up, we're doing our construction. We're constructing ourselves in pods, you know, circles of tents, and interlocking circles. And that's what we're trying to do. But it was 42 degrees today, for example, you know. There was a lot of wind the other night, a bit of a storm, and it cracked the rods on a few tents. But that's what we're doing. We're tasking out. We've got Kitchen Dave now, who deals with the kitchen. We've got Mike Broderick, original soldier, who deals with the recycling. We've got Sherry and Vicky, who deal with sorting out the clothes donations and washing things that have gotten wet. And you know, we've got John Reese, you know, our original, you know, number one soldier, right? Number one soldier who leads our parades. John is dealing with stores and provisions. And I deal with sanitation and trash removal. That's my job. I come from nice up the place.
Uh-huh.
You know, nice it up and keep it tidy, right? That's my job.
Is there a Food Not Bombs group or other food serving groups that help support your...
Yeah, Food Not Bombs come out and they give us some nice vegan food, you know. And see, you know, we have, you know, the missions, right? It's kind of one size fits all kind of thing. And they assume you're Christian. Okay, now, we have Muslim and Rasta, for example, Ibrahim and I. Now, we don't eat pork. You know, we don't eat that stuff, you know. So they're trying to feed us ham and eggs and stuff.
Right.
You know, we don't eat that stuff. You know, like Jewish men have kosher food, Muslim men have halal food, Rasta men have ital food. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, we can't eat that kind of stuff.
Now, what about women and children? How many women and children are involved in this operation?
Well, okay, now, we can't have children, unless it's the child of a couple, right? We can't. We have to be careful of, you know, like runaways. That's a legal thing, right? So everyone has to be 18. Right, so the youngest we've got is 18, right? The oldest we've got is 75.
But there are many homeless people who have children, right? How are they continuing? I mean, you actually have thousands of other homeless people. Are the police just laying off them, or what reports are you getting from them?
Well, they're backing off us because we're organized, right?
Right.
Other people are still getting the same stress. I mean,
they're still getting ticketed in spite of the Gallagher ruling.
Yeah, they're getting chased away and stuff like that, right? But see, you know, we're still poor, right? But we're no longer powerless. You know, homeless, I mean, it's kind of a cachet word for the poor nowadays, you know? The gap is growing, you know, it's widening between rich and poor. Affordable living space is climbing beyond the reach of a lot of working poor people. You know, we have one couple named Jennifer and Lee in the place. You know, he's Native American, and I don't know where she comes from, like originally her heritage, right? But they work every day. You know, they will work each in a factory. They work 7 days a week. But these are these four-hour-a-day jobs, right? And that means you don't get the 15-minute break. You don't get the lunch break. You don't get the benefits, right? So on this kind of job, right, they were living in the weeds between the factories where they worked in, right? That was fine with the factory owners, right? That's okay with them, right? They could have their tarps and everything and live in the weeds as long as they hid out. You know, well, we're not playing hide-and-seek anymore. You know, we've popped up our tents. You know, we see the solution to the problem is nylon. It comes in the form of tents. And we think it's a nylon revolution, basically. What we're hoping for is that tents will pop up like mushrooms, those little dome tents all over the damn western...
Now, has any of that happened in the last month or not?
Pardon me?
Have other people been emulating your, you know... kind of using you as a model, or
people will when we show how to do it.
Uh-huh.
You know how we did it,
but hasn't happened yet.
It hasn't happened yet, but it will happen when we analyze our tactics, strategy, and you know.
Now, do you have any legal support?
Like, oh yeah, we have Julie Stevens, who won the Wicks case that got that overturned. We've got Ed Johnson. We've got Karen Gilmore. We've got a good legal team.
Why isn't this team going for an injunction citywide to stop the police from enforcing the Portland camping ordinance, given that, you know, one of your local judges has ruled it unconstitutional? Vera Katz's opinion notwithstanding, when a law is ruled unconstitutional, it doesn't just affect that person. That's bullshit.
I know, but that's what Katz says. And
yeah, but why not take it to court? I mean, why isn't your legal team going in and, you know, demanding that there be an injunction against all police activity against homeless people, at least under this law?
Well, you know, the wheels, I mean, I don't know anything about law. I have a ninth grade education.
I got you.
Right, I mean, I couldn't read or write till I was 19. I'm dyslexic.
Right, it's just a question that some of us have down here.
Sure.
We should, yeah, anybody you want to refer us to on that issue?
let's see. I don't know. You could talk to Karen Gilmore, I guess, at Legal Aid here.
Okay, we try and do that later. What should people know, and how can people help? Let's ask that last question. How can people help out Camp Dignity, and how can they reach you?
We have a tax number through Street Roots, right? And we need nylon. You know, we're trying to upgrade the quality of liberty and life for the people in the camp.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we have people in small tents. We want to get these big 8-man tents for every individual and every couple. You know, every family and every individual.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, then you can live properly. So we're trying to get more nylon. We have our portal extra service. We have to get a dumpster, right? Because at the moment we're putting stuff in other people's dumpsters. That's a fine.
Right.
You know, that's illegal. That's $1,000. We can't afford no $1,000, right? You know?
So is there an address that people can send nylon money or extra dumpsters to?
If they send a check, right, it would be to Out of the Doorways / Street Roots.
Mm-hmm.
And it would come to... 123, what is it? Damn. It's on Morrison Street. You got it down there somewhere, but read it out sometime, right? It's 1231. That's it. 1231 Morrison Street in Portland, Oregon.
Well, that's great. We're talking to Jack, who is the sanitation man, if you will.
I'm the cleaner, you know.
The recycling individual here. For the camp
original
Dignity.
Soldier, Yammer.
Yeah, and this is of course a project that to some extent comes out of the Street Roots newspaper. Is that accurate?
Newspaper, yeah, man. Street Roots paper. It's a hell of a paper for sure, man.
Uh-huh.
You know, I give people a voice.
And Jack, I know you're also a poet. You want to end with a poem here so we can, or you got anything nearby you wish to throw at us?
I don't know. What's the question again? I'm in the newspaper office now, so there's a lot of activity running around. So.
Oh, no, it's okay. I just thought you might want to throw a poem at us before you leave.
Oh, gosh, man. Housing problem or something like that, right? No, I don't have a copy handy. So, you know, I can't remember what the hell poems are, right? You know?
But if people want to help out, they can give a call to 423-HUFF. That's the local Santa Cruz number of Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. We'll put you in touch with Street Roots up in Portland, Oregon, where in spite of a judicial decision that the coal camping ordinance is unconstitutional, Mayor Vera Katz's goon squads are still continuing to harass homeless people. But Camp Dignity is rising up and continuing, and I guess we'll continue to do so, eh, Jack?
We're going forward into the future, you know, and it's a good future. We're looking at, we're wandering in the wilderness for a time, but one day, as surely as day follows night, we'll reach a land flowing with milk and honey. Trust me. Yeah, man. That's all I have to say. Robert Norris?
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
And that was Jack Teferi up in Portland, Oregon, in a phone conversation of a couple days ago about Camp Dignity, which is in day 45 or so of its lifetime. It's a camp of about 30 or 40 homeless people that has moved so far to five sites in the wake of the Gallagher decision, which overturned the entire camping ban in Portland, asserting that you can't punish homeless people for their status, and hence you cannot make it illegal to sleep and put their possessions at risk at night, because that's what this peculiar camping ordinance up in Oregon does. In the wake of that, police continue to arrest and harass homeless people, so this group of homeless people from the newspaper Street Roots up in Portland got together and have been encouraging the public to support a camp they call Camp Dignity, which essentially moves from place to place, stays as long as it can until the police threaten them. I think that in Oregon it requires 24-hour notice before they can arrest you and seize your belongings if you're homeless. That's an Oregon law that California would do well to copy. And we talked to Jack Teferi over at Street Roots Paper. He's also the man who stays with the camp and handles, sounds like, the poetry and the trash, among other things. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your Thursday early evening host, Robert Norris, or Bathrobe Spear Robert, as I sometimes call myself. The show is Bathrobe Spear's Broadsides, and we give you some strong language at times, some hopefully strong sentiments about the need to restore rights to all people, particularly people outside who are poor and homeless. And we encourage you to call in at 427-3772 with your own concerns. Any kind of poverty issues interest me, particularly ones concerning homelessness. But, you know, even if you're in a house, you're just, you know, I don't want to say a paycheck away from homelessness, since a paycheck doesn't even cover a rent, it does cover, I guess, part of the percentage of a rent here in Santa Cruz. But people are very, very close to being homeless, even people who had just been completely complacent about it before. So any poverty issue interests me at this point. I've talked to a number of people in the last few days. One woman wanted to call in. She was going to be talking about how the schools are harassing her child. A couple contacted me yesterday talking about police harassment for living in their vehicle and encouraged me to call a HUFF meeting. HUFF is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. It's a kind of a makeshift group that concerns itself with publicizing injustices, agitating for justice, and organizing when the time seems ripe. There's a phone line to call in if you got information for HUFF or you got inquiries about HUFF. It's 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Again, the phone number for this show at Free Radio Santa Cruz is 427-3772. There will be a HUFF meeting tomorrow at 115 Coral Street. That's the Homeless Services Center. We'll actually be tabling there from 1:30 to 2:30, and then from 2:30 to 3 or 3:30, we'll have a meeting to see if anybody wants to bring any issues up around police harassment or other things, ranging from discrimination in businesses and in shelter programs to harassment of bicyclists, homeless bicyclists, to rent control, which is an issue that we may be taking up in a future show in greater detail. I've gotten a very positive report from rent control activist Bob LaMonica, who this very evening is over in San Jose attending yet another rent control or bust conclave over there, and hopefully he'll give us the latest update if there's more to be told when he gets back. Other things that have been happening tonight is the, for those of you who have community television, Club Cruise, a half-hour show that airs twice weekly by Becky Johnson, who also produces this show, will be on tonight from 7 to 7:30 on Channel 27. And the show this evening features yours truly as host, as well as the famous bearded activist of the helmets, challenging the helmet law, Richard Quigley. Rawhide Richard, I don't know what you'd call him. This guy has got an even longer beard than I do and a shorter temper, I got to tell you. He's also very well spoken, and he's quite something to behold in court and quite something to behold on television. Very entertaining, very colorful, very much on the mark in his own civil rights struggles, which have to do with such things as keeping the courts honest around the rights of motorcyclists, around the rights of people who are in vehicles, around the rights of people like Jerry Henry, who we've talked about on this show, the Aptos street minister who was held twice on $100,000 bail for the crime of offending a Gottschalk's employee and annoying the sheriff's department and the particular local honcho of that of the medieval fife of the sheriff's department out in the Aptos Rancho Del Mar shopping center. I think it was Sergeant Hemingway. And Jerry Henry was, you know, was enjoined from going back to that shopping center or part of it, and he's appealing that decision, and Richard Quigley was right there with him. And if you want to see Quigley talk about a number of issues, tune in to Channel 27 in about 25 minutes if you can get Channel 27. What else is happening? Well, of course, Jerry Henry isn't the only one who's suffering from an injunction. I, Becky Johnson, and Bernard Klitzner, as those of you who read the Metro or almost any of the media probably know, have been told to keep our protest signs away from the city council offices. Those are the offices where it's actually a large building. It's the entire building on your left as you walk towards city council from the library. It's called Room 10, but it essentially takes up the entire building, and it includes the city manager's office, the city council offices, the mayor's office, the city council, city manager's conference room where all the closed sessions are usually held and many committee meetings are held, and many of the public records. This has been ruled off limits to us because of our city council coffee clatch and tag team teach-in, which was a very modest, low-key, rather limited effort to bring to city council members' attention the fact that they were saying one thing to people when they were running for election and then doing absolutely nothing about the shelter crisis and the sleeping ban in a situation in a year where 41 homeless people died, in a year where there's less shelter than there's only shelter for 160 people out of a total homeless population of, well, they counted 1,300 people in March, and we've had some controversy about that statistic. Ed Porter apparently is challenging that statistic, and we need to take him to task for that and indeed endorse that statistic. But there are many, many more homeless people outside than there is accommodation for, and we're not saying everybody should have a Cadillac accommodation. What we're saying is you shouldn't arrest and harass people for sleeping where they must, provided they're causing no other problems. And that's been the reasoned argument for years, fighting against bigotry the way black people have fought against segregation bigotry, the way brown people have fought against Anglo bigotry, the way women have fought against male-dominant bigotry, the way young people fight against the bigotry of those who restrict their rights and discriminate against them, or elders, for that matter, before they got any kind of Social Security, faced the bigotry of the society, and still do. Groups that are not favored face discrimination, and poor people who are outside face probably the most discrimination. If you look at you can add to that if they're black or if they're female or if they're gay, you get these additional strikes against you. And when you have no place to go, no place to retire to, no place to rest in, for God's sake, then it becomes intolerable. Anyway, we got an injunction for bringing the sleeping ban up for about 4 hours a day by having a sign and flyers and sitting in the public area of the city council offices. Tim Fitzmaurice decided he didn't want us there. A rather high-strung secretary, administrative aide named Anna Brooks, and I say she's high-strung because I don't know if it was entirely simply a plot by Fitzmaurice to get rid of us. I think that Anna Brooks didn't like us having us there. She liked to have this kind of standard control over her office where there weren't that many people there except for very limited amounts of time. But that's not the rules about how to run that office. It's open to the public during office hours from 8 to 5 with 1 hour off for lunch. And when they didn't want to play by the rules, they found a way around the rules by using an injunction to get rid of us. We are currently barred from being 50 yards, that's half a football field, from those offices unless we are on business to another office or on business to a public meeting. So we can't look at the correspondence. We can't look at the records. We can't even telephone in to talk to our council members because those calls go through Anna Brooks. Or we have to worry that they do because she's the secretary who usually answers the phone, and that would be an immediate violation of the injunction, a misdemeanor, and possibly a felony for us. So Mayor Fitzmaurice, and I do believe that he has had a role in this, a significant role. He's the one who told her to begin logging the fact that we were there. He's the one who demanded we leave repeatedly, even though he had no rational reason for it other than shouting we were harassing the staff. He didn't want to meet with us to mediate. We weren't told by her superior that there was a problem. We weren't no kind of reconciliation or discussion or even a written discussion of the problems was presented to us. We were simply presented with a get the fuck out order, leave your First Amendment rights a block away. Thank you very much. And hopefully that will be reversed in court. There was to be a court hearing on the 31st. That was postponed by our attorneys because the city attorney, John Barisoni, apparently delivered his papers late to us, and we didn't have time to reply. So the latest court date is the 8th of February. That's the latest word on the next court date, February 8th. That's, I believe, Thursday at 8:30 in the morning. In Department 7 is where this saga will continue. The next chapter is not going to be us showing we're not harassing anybody. That's kind of down the road. It has to be the city showing that this particular lawsuit is not a politically motivated slap suit, a strategic lawsuit against public participation, hence the word slap, meaning the kind of lawsuit that officials, government officials or corporate officials file to shut up their critics by tying them up in litigation. And that seems to be exactly what's happened to us. We've been barred from a number of council meetings. We've been barred from any access to city council records. We are, in fact, second-class citizens in the most direct kind of way, at least insofar as our city council activity goes. And I encourage people out there who think this is improper behavior by the mayor to give him a call and call the entire city council at 420-5017 and tell them two things. Tell them first to act immediately to end the sleeping ban and to some other reasonable alternative that will decriminalize people when they do what they have to do at night, sleep. And then also state that it seems inappropriate for activists who are bringing this message peacefully to council, a council that prefers to ignore the message, including such I ran on the sleeping ban people as Ed Porter, who had to endorse ending the sleeping ban in order to get Green Party support and has done absolutely nothing around that in any public way, nor has he given assurances privately. The only time I've heard him even mention the sleeping ban was when he came out of city council in November, the evening when he was, sworn in. And I said, Ed, I wasn't allowed to go in the council chambers even then because I had been arrested earlier that evening for the Golden Potty Award, the award to Catherine Byers for not setting up porta potties and dumpsters in spite of the clear mandate of the council from a year and a half before that be done. And Sugar had me arrested for presenting that at oral communications. That information apparently is too dirty. It's okay for homeless people to be put in a position like animals where they have to go to the bathroom outside behind bushes, and then they get attacked for doing that. But it's not okay to raise that issue at city council. Anyway, I was outside. Ed Porter came out, and I said, Ed, when are you going to end the sleeping ban? And Ed said, Ed, what are you going to do first? And he said, end the sleeping ban. And I said, sounds good, Ed. Let's get together on it. He said, okay, I'll call you by the end of the week. You know, Ed never called. And Ed didn't respond repeatedly to phone calls and messages, and Ed has not even agreed to come to a homeless working group meeting, to which he has been invited along with Christopher Crone and Emily Riley. We have a phone call. Hi there, you're on the air.
¿Habla español?
Un poco.
Sí.
Well, I speak a little Spanish.
Sí. Okay. Anyone, Butch?
Butch?
Yeah, Butch, no good.
Oh, Butchy Baker?
Yeah, Butch.
El hombre de la policía?
No, el nombre de la... De la Juanchito.
¿De qué?
De Butch.
Butch, no sé quién es Butch.
De Juanchito.
¿Quién?
Ustedes hablan del presidente, ¿no?
No entiendo. Mi español es muy pequeño. I don't understand. My Spanish is very little.
¿Sí?
But you can try. You can. Se puede otra vez. Try one more time.
Usted habla de los del presidente.
Oh, Bush. Bush. Not Butchie, but Bush.
Yeah.
Sí, Bush. El jefe Bush.
El jefe.
Yo tengo problemas con nuestro jefe, Timothy Fitzmaurice, alcalde de la ciudad de Santa Cruz. I have problems with Fitzmaurice, the mayor of Santa Cruz.
¿Sí?
Sí.
Oh.
Es más, ¿cómo se dice? Local. Es más cerca de a nosotros, pero he's closer to us, but, you know, he's equally far away. Es lejos en compasión, ¿verdad?
De Juanchito, yeah.
Es mi problema. ¿Qué quieres? What do you want to say about Bush? ¿Qué quiere decir? ¿Qué quiere hablar de Bush?
Porque hay un plan que Bush. Bush no quiere a los latinos, a los mexicanos.
¿Tú piensas que el presidente tiene una plan contra los mexicanos?
Sí.
Yeah, you think he has a plan against
Clinton.
Clinton está más bien,
el presidente Clinton.
¿Tú gustas mejor Clinton o no?
Sí. Clinton sí.
Pero señor Clinton tiene un programa muy grande contra la guerra de drogas, ¿verdad?
Sí, la
Clinton
misma.
Had a big expansion of the drug war. I mean,
sí,
I don't know.
Sí, porque Bush, él no sé de Bush, porque Bush está metiendo ley de eso, de los...
¿Él no entiende la ley de proteger los inmigrantes, o...?
De los inmigrantes, ándale.
Sí, so Bush doesn't understand the law that would protect immigrants and so forth. Frankly, I got to tell you, I don't think there's I think that Clinton, Clinton también tiene problemas con, nosotros,
sí.
Tiene problemas porque él no quiere dar derechos a nadie. Clinton, I don't think, want to give rights to anybody anyway. And, you know, particularly, in Santa Cruz, tengo nuestra guerra contra los pobres, ¿verdad?
Sí, los pobres.
We have a war against the poor in Santa Cruz.
Porque también de Santa Cruz también cita que uno está trabajando por ellos, por el presidente.
Uh-huh.
Y luego Bush no quiere los mexicanos. Eso es lo que estamos peleando también de eso.
I understand some of this. Entiendo un poco, pero no entiendo mucho. Qué lástima. Discúlpeme, señor. Mi español es demasiado pequeño para hablar con inteligencia usted.
Sí.
My Spanish is too limited to speak to you with any intelligence here. What we need is a Spanish volunteer. So if anybody out there wants to translate, si alguien que quiere traducir, venga, y vamos a tener un programa donde se puede traducir.
¿El Santa Cruz?
¿Qué?
¿El Santa Cruz?
Sí, en Santa Cruz. We had a program translated about the Dolphin Lee Project, la proyecto Dolphin Lee,
in
Los Beach Flats, in español y inglés. It was
in
Spanish and in English, but that took some preparation. Necesita preparación, ¿verdad?
Sí, para todo el Beach Flats, también toda la gente.
Sí, toda la gente. Gracias, señor. Hay más, pero pienso que es todo lo que yo puedo hacer.
Okay, habla de... Okay.
Discúlpeme.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
Well, there you are. The would-be Spanish expert strikes out again. Let's hear something from many years ago that is still quite appropriate.
I got news of the very best kind about troubles that are falling behind about people that used to be blind till they open up their eyes to see. It's news when they begin to ask why they're poor until the day that they die they're tired of pie in the sky and they want some security. And it's news, ain't that news, ain't that something to see. News, you talk about the news, it's mighty good news to me. I got news about some ordinary men, they heard it preach time and again to be patient and grateful, amen, and don't agitate around here. They argued and they talked it around and they woke up and here's what they found, their voices made a mighty big sound till they didn't know the meaning of fear. And that's news, ain't that news, ain't that something to see. News, you talk about the news, it's mighty good news to me. In a hazard, them eating that night, organizing and doing it right and planning for a hell of a fight, and they sure don't aim to lose. In New York, the tenants said, no, the slumlord ain't a-getting our door, they're fed up. And I want you to know that's the very best kind of news. And that's news, ain't that news, ain't that something to see. News, you talk about the news, it's mighty good news to me. That's news, ain't that news, ain't that something to see. News, you talk about the news, it's mighty good news to me.
And that's Tom Paxton from the album of the same name, Ain't That News. Probably one of the best albums he ever put out from the 60s. We're going to hear a few more cuts from that throughout this show. This is 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz, 24-hour radio, commercial-free radio, censorship-free radio, FCC-free radio, NAB, National Association of Broadcasters, free radio. This is your community radio in Santa Cruz, broadcasting without a license, but with great respect for the truth and with great respect for the right of the public to be heard. So exercise your rights. You know what they say. Ignore your rights and they'll go away. 427-3772 is our online call-in number, and you can call in now, 427-3772, and have your say. So give it a call, 427-FRSC, 427-3772. Got some interesting articles in this month's High Times magazine. Here's a thing called Ray of Hope. Cops return pot. Last October, Los Angeles County Sheriffs returned medical marijuana seized from Andre Nagy in April 1999. That's October 1999. This is a year old, this story, still. Nagy, co-founder of the short-lived Ventura County Medical Cannabis Center in 1996, was not arrested or charged with a crime following the raid on her residence in Agoura Hills. However, sheriff's deputies had seized all of her and her mother's medical marijuana and growing equipment. 1 month after the raid, Nagy received a questionnaire from the district attorney's office, which would determine whether criminal charges were warranted. I mailed it in, and the following day, my attorney got a call with the good news that they weren't charging me, she says. Well, that's great, but what about my medicine? She and her attorney commenced a legal battle to have her medical marijuana returned. Incredibly, after 18 months, the cops gave her back 2 pounds of dried marijuana, 6 grow lamps, 2 fans, 2 timers, and a CO2 dispenser. I think it's incumbent upon every person to know their rights and to stand up for them, Nagy said. To get my property back, I had to keep asking. 10 years ago, I was convicted of cultivating 6 plants and served 4 years. Now, here we are 10 years later, and I've had my medical marijuana returned. I can grow my marijuana. I can keep my marijuana. I can smoke it on the street. I feel confident that my rights will not be violated. That's a major change. Story by Bill Bridges in the March issue of High Times. I think she's a little too optimistic, frankly, and it's too bad that in Santa Cruz we haven't got a city council with the guts to declare a medical marijuana emergency, so the 800 to 1,000 patients who are now out of luck and wandering around looking for their marijuana in the beach flats or San Francisco or somewhere else because the cannabis pharmaceuticals closed down because Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice and former Mayor Keith Sugar didn't have the political balls to put anything on the agenda that would allow... already with the press ops and the photo ops and the Puffa Wuffa Rooney back in April when they announced their medical marijuana law. But when it came to doing something real that would give 800 to 1,000 people an opportunity to use a club that was being discriminated against in one neighborhood, then sought to find another place and got more trashing from both the city agencies and other local groups, inappropriately, the city decided to do nothing. And as a result, the club went bankrupt and has disbanded. And all we have left is Wham. And I want to say, all you Whammers, don't feel too proud of yourselves. I think it's incumbent upon people in this struggle to stick together, not to simply push their favored club forward. And insofar as that was done, I think that was a large mistake. Wham can't handle the overflow, as we know, so people are now in a criminal status. That is my understanding. If I am misunderstanding this and inappropriately putting forward facts that aren't facts, well, please give me a call, 427-3772. But my understanding is that Wham got favored status and the cannabis pharmaceuticals got ousted, and neither the city council stood up for the city council members didn't stand up for the right of people to use medical marijuana in Santa Cruz by endorsing the kind of ordinance that passed up in the Bay Area, a medical marijuana emergency that allowed the suspension of some of these regulations around zoning and so forth. And similarly, the other club didn't come and say, what are you doing? I think if Valerie Corral had stood up there and made a statement, it might have been listened to. And I also want, of course, say that people have to stick up for themselves. If the people in Kate Wells' Cannabis Club had started taking their medicine outside City Hall in the daytime puff out, well, I bet there would have been some fast action by City Council as well. So it is a matter of the community standing together, folks, on these issues, and I'm really sorry when they don't. And we need to do it. We need to do it. And sometimes that means a little self-criticism, and I think we have to be prepared for that, too. Of course, you can always criticize me. I'm your favorite scapegoat. I'm at 427-3772. I'm hoping for a call also from our political journalist, somewhat sick in the last couple of days, but never sickening like the city council can be when it gives away, housing and people's rights in the beach flats, as it's been doing for the last year. Scott Graham, who actually attended the Fitzmaurice Chief Belcher Bicyclist Summit that was held Monday night at the police station, and there I should say the community room of the police station. You may remember we played some cuts from the city council discussion where the city council essentially rubber-stamped yet another of Chief Belcher's give me more police officers, give me more money requests. This time, of course, the money will first come from a federal grant, but after 2 years, the city will be left holding the bag and having to pay for more cops that apparently are going to be used to harass bicyclists rather than, let us say, to evenly enforce the law, to recognize the intrinsic disparities and problems in the way the current law is written so that bicyclists get the worst end of it. It's been discussed here on this station how various European cities have different laws for bicyclists than you have for motor vehicles because they are two different kinds of modes of transportation, and they need different laws. Sometimes they even need different kinds of stoplights, I'm told, at the intersections where cars and bikes and pedestrians stop. And we have heard testimony about this outrageous incident presided over by Sergeant Butchie Baker on January 20th at the Bush counter-inaugural involving Sean... What is his last name? A man named Sean was hit by a man named Gutierrez. A man on a bicycle was hit by a man in a car. And the man in the car, though he tried to get away and failed, according to the crowd, and was held there by the crowd in essentially a citizen's arrest, was released by the police without any particular charges. It was not taken into custody, in spite of many witnesses claiming that there was an act that seemed to be certainly of emotional, if not intentional, destructiveness. Anyway, we have an incoming call here. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
That's Sean Duncan.
Sean Duncan, thank you. I know he was in the Metro last week, and there's a teeny tiny thing in the news column of the Metro this week about they still haven't heard from the police department just what's going on and why they aren't interviewing the witnesses.
Yeah, I understand that the police report came out. It didn't have any of the statements of the eyewitnesses. The guy was not cited, the driver of the car that hit the bicyclist.
Right.
Was not cited, and they said the case is still open.
Right. Well, you know, it's nice. The Happy John Dine case, I suppose. I suppose, no, it wasn't open. They closed that one 12 hours after the guy got shot dead by Connor Carey back in 1997. So I suppose this is an improvement. But that, I think that's probably only because, and indeed, I'm glad they did, so many bicyclists showed up. And I'm hoping we can get a report from Scott on what happened when the bicyclists met the mayor. What I understand from Scott is that the mayor just said, oh, I'll take care of it, but didn't present anything specific to the bicyclist community that they were looking for. Namely, they wanted this grant set aside until there was a real, let's say, grant to local bicyclists for educational purposes, and not just for more cops for the police to continue doing what they've always been doing, which is, well, you go down to Pacific Avenue and watch them have a gay old time ticketing bicyclists who go the wrong way, and then assaulting those bicyclists if when the problems come up. We had in a case the day before this Sean Duncan incident where a woman named Jen Curry was apparently set upon by Sergeant Butchie Baker, the same sergeant. I guess he's the mall sergeant. And this was the claim made in two witnesses who spoke to me by phone. Again, against a bicyclist. And
now, I've seen some figures that from a couple years back where the most common citation on Pacific Avenue was riding a bicycle the wrong way down in front of that block where Logos Books is located. It's the equivalent of a speed trap there, but just for bicyclists. Mm-hmm. You really very rarely see a car go down that way.
And the irony is it's bicyclists who are often most at risk because cars, and I'm certainly not innocent of this myself, I'm not a bicyclist, I'm a motorist, you know, are just, you know, we think we rule the road, and, you know, we're the road hogs par excellence, and you know, we don't look when we open our doors, and we move into the bike lanes without any problem. I don't think I've ever gotten a ticket for riding into a bike lane, which I habitually do. I should be educated against doing that. Come and arrest me, somebody, for God's sake. You know, I mean, no, I mean it. I think there should be real, you know, emphasis one way or another. I don't know if you want to have, you know, massive arrests of people, although who knows? They say that's salutary, but
well,
it just hasn't been done.
I think your point is well taken there, that a bicycle that's causing an accident with a car, or a car that's causing an accident to a bicycle, the consequences are far more severe to the bike rider than they are to the car rider. Just, you know, the threat of physical injury is so much greater.
That's definitely true.
And so the fact that this grant was just geared for enforcing crimes committed by bicycle riders, it just makes it very suspect. And I'm reminded of one of the people we saw down when we were in Los Angeles. They had the billionaires for Bush or Gore, mm-hmm. and there was Randy Warbucks, and he was saying, "Oh, these I'm very, very concerned about these bicycle riders. There's just absolutely no money to be made from bicycle riders. They must be stopped."
Well, that was, the point was made, I think, by Scott Graham last night when I spoke to him. Again, I hope he calls in. That the amount of money, $27,000, they want to spend on one motorcycle could be used to get many bicycles, top-of-the-line bicycles, and put these cops on bicycles. And ironically, we shouldn't be asking for this, because bicycle cops are much more effective. They can sneak up on you, they can go to places that motorcycle people can't go, or officers in vehicles can't go. They have more contact with the community as they go through. I mean, I'm not terribly happy when I see the Berkeley bike cops riding the wrong way on Telegraph Avenue, harassing homeless people and young people. So, but, you know, it obviously makes a lot more sense, even for policing work, to have cops on bicycles. Anything more you want to say on this subject?
Well, I've seen cops on just about every mode of transportation that there is available. It doesn't seem to be a limit to the police budget for whatever equipment they might need.
No, I'm afraid not.
Yeah. No, that's about it.
Thank you.
And except for Watch Club Cruise, it just came on 2 minutes ago.
All right, for all you community television
Switch
people.
Now.
Thank
community
you.
Community TV, Channel 27.
Bye-bye. And indeed, Bathrop Spears Broadsides, if you're getting tired of hearing these same old voices, you'll get to be able to hear my same old voice on Club Cruise. You get to see my exciting face as well. And that'll be coming on real shortly. Let's have a bit of music here. assuming I can figure out how to work the phonograph, always a challenge.
I've come to wear the uniform and join the martial tramp. And I want to do my duty, but one thing I do implore. You must give me lessons, Sergeant, for I've never killed before. To do my job obediently is all that I desire. To learn my weapon thoroughly and how to aim and fire. To learn to kill the enemy and then to slaughter more. Oh, I'll need instruction, Sergeant, for I've never killed before. Now there are rumors in the camp about our enemy. They say that when you see him, he looks just like you and me. But you deny it, Sergeant, and you are a man of war. So you must give me lessons, for I've never killed before. Now there are several lessons that I haven't mastered yet. I haven't got the hang of how to use the bayonet. If he doesn't die at once, am I to stick him with it more? Oh, I hope you will be patient, for I've never killed before. And the hand grenade is something that I just don't understand. You've got to throw it quickly, or you're apt to lose your hand. Does it blow a man to pieces with its wicked muffled roar? Oh, I've got so much to learn, because I've never killed before. Well, I want to thank you, Sergeant, for the help you've been to me. You've taught me how to kill and how to hate the enemy. And I know that I'll be ready when they march me off to war. And I know that it won't matter that I've never killed before. I know that it won't matter that I've never killed before.
And that's The Willing Conscript by Tom Paxton on his album Ain't That News. And we have an incoming call here.
You're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert.
Hey, Scott Graham.
How you doing?
Not bad. Yourself?
Oh, all right.
So you actually were on the scene when Chief Belcher and Emperor Tim Fitzmaurice and the many bicycle peasants got together in the police community room on Monday night.
Well, there was actually as many or more staff personnel in the room as there was bicycle riders.
I see. Now, staff, those are the people that essentially set the agenda at the city council?
It seems that way, doesn't it?
These are the people who kind of come up with the grants that favor the police and then invent reasons why the bicyclists are just completely wrong when they criticize?
Right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, basically at this meeting, the Sergeant Bailey and Chief Belcher were hemming and hawing at all of the suggestions the police were making, I mean, the bicyclists were making. Even, you know, what seemed to be quite reasonable was that the police are going to be giving away 200 or 400 or 800 bicycle helmets, not only to school kids, but they're going to carry them around in their cars, because if you're under 18 in California, you're supposed to wear a bike helmet. And right now, the cops can ticket kids if they catch riding without a helmet. So the cops will be, once they get this grant, will supposedly carry helmets in their car and give kids a helmet. Now, if they see the same kid not wearing a helmet a couple days later, they can give them a ticket. But the bicyclists were saying, well, why not get bike lights, too? And that way, if you see somebody riding at night without a bike light, you can go give them a bike light instead of giving them a ticket. You know, you're getting over $500,000 here. Why not, you know, spring for 800 bike lights? And they were, oh, well, you know, part of this grant is for equipment, so we could, you know, make the purchase of bike lights part of the equipment. And, you know, people wanted them to put this language in there. Just like the helmets are part of the language of the grant, why not make bike lights part of the language of the grant? You know, it just seemed to make sense. But
when the evening was over, was it part of the grant?
It didn't seem like it was.
in the evening was
it
over...
It wasn't an evening, it was a morning meeting.
Oh, sorry. When the morning was over, was any part of the suggestions of the bicyclists written into the grant?
I don't know. I tried to get a copy of the grant today as written, because it was supposed to be submitted no later than yesterday. So it should be done now. But I was directed finally to Sergeant Bailey.
Uh-oh.
And he wasn't around, so I tried to get a hold of the chief, and he wasn't around. But
what about Emperor Fitzmaurice?
You know, nobody at City Hall, you know, the clerk's office or anywhere else has it. And Public Works only has their part of it, which is only $120,000. And that's all, you know, with basically the Public Works portion of this is more to do with pedestrian side, you know, whether where sidewalks are in disrepair, where sidewalks need to be put in, and what street crossings are dangerous, where they might want to put in lighted crosswalks and stuff like that.
Well, there's some people who say, and perhaps reasonably so, you know, those kinds of public improvements can't be bad. And what about the, you know, the question of providing education in schools? Doesn't sound bad. What percentage of this, by your view, actually goes for the salaries of police officers who are not mandated to change their current priorities, which seem to be skewed against bicyclists?
Right. Well, that seems to be the whole problem with this grant, is that the most of the money goes to paying the three new officer salaries, one sworn officer and two CSOs. And the first year of the grant pays 100% of their salaries. The second year of the grant pays 50% of their salaries. And the third year, there is no more grant. The city has to pay their salaries. The city has to keep these positions. If the city doesn't keep, if this police department doesn't keep these positions, then they don't lose entitlement to going after any more federal grants for X number of years.
Which makes it unlikely that they won't continue to fund the positions, even if, let's say, they'd prefer... It's hard to tell what they'd prefer, because we don't have any indication of what the council... All we get is what the police department wants, right?
Right. Well, in the last budget cycle, you know, there was like two or three officers on that budget cycle where they were creating new positions with these COPS grants. And the police department has been, you know, ever since Clinton got in office and started these COPS grants, the police department's been, you know, putting four or five COPS on every year with them.
Now, by COPS, you mean you're talking about community policing grants?
Yeah, they were these COPS grants that the federal government, the Justice Department would give out. And so they'd hire these police with them, and they were three-year grants, but still it was the same type of formula. The first year, 100% covered by the grant. Second year, two-thirds covered. The third year, one-third covered. And then the fourth year, the city has to take over paying those positions.
Yeah.
So in the last budget cycle, the city council told the chief to stop creating positions this way, that they didn't want to, you know, create positions that started out them not paying it, but then ended up where they were paying it.
Well, since the police chief seems to be ignoring the policy dictates of the city council, perhaps the city council can save a little money by, should we say, retiring the police chief and getting someone who actually pays attention to what the council enacts.
Well, that would probably be a good step. You know, there's probably a number of people right here in the community that could do a better job. I mean, even some of the lower-ranking police officers themselves are... seem much more capable of actually understanding what this community is about. You know, there's, I think Chief Belcher, you know, he's a nice enough guy and everything, but I think he's really out of touch with what a lot of Santa Cruz is about.
Yeah, I've had my problems with Belcher in terms of numerous, not just disagreeing with his policies, but I found some question about, and I have to say this publicly. Well, it's a matter of integrity. We have indications, not indications, he lied under oath back in 1989 in a case I was involved in. It actually didn't involve any testimony about me, and it had to do with a matter of, I was arrested at city council and with two others for not leaving at the stroke of 11 when the city council tried to close down the council around the sleeping ban. And in that public testimony, what he did was he confiscated signs for the sleeping band, but did not confiscate signs for the Navy ship, which was the issue, was should the Navy ship be allowed to come to Santa Cruz. There was a big protest against it. He claimed he was nowhere near the council meeting on that night. But a very reputable man, Ned von Volkenberg, who's I believe he's a carpenter. Maybe I'm wrong, but he's certainly one of the big union people, as well as he was the clerk of the Quaker meeting. Simply stated, I talked to him. He was right outside the council chambers. I mean, maybe the guy simply doesn't remember. But there've been other instances, like the question of deep sixing half the complaints in 1995 and 1996. Based on violating his own department's C-7 directive, state law, and city law. And yet, you know, everything he does is holy writ. He can't be touched. He can't be criticized. We've tried to file complaints about him for misstating what happened in this most recent Steve Argue newspaper case, where Steve Argue was selling the newspaper Street Spirit on the streets in front of New Leaf in 1998. And the day after he appeared in print with Crone and Sugar protesting police violence, he was thrown to the ground by Officer Garner, who claimed he didn't have the right to sell a newspaper, which, of course, isn't true. The city code exempts newspapers. And Belcher, instead of, you know, dealing with the issue, and he instead said, he wasn't selling a newspaper, he was obstructing the sidewalk. Though if you examine the police reports, you see endlessly the phrase selling a street newspaper was the reason they arrested him, as well as additional complicating charges they threw in, like resisting arrest and I don't know, assaulting an officer, all of which were dropped within 4 days. Now Argue is suing the police department, and we're getting some more complications, which I'm going to discuss later. But Belcher's position on that has been repeatedly to either pass on misinformation or to intentionally lie about the situation. I'm quite clear what he's doing, but I think he has to be called on it, and I don't know. I'm
Well, I think, in Santa Cruz, there's two departments in the city that pretty much are entities unto themselves, and that's the police department and the redevelopment agency. Both of those entities are just, like, doing basically whatever they want, you know, and they always somehow manage to get whatever city council sitting there to rubber stamp everything they're doing.
But what about Ed Porter, the Green Party candidate?
Well, I haven't seen anyone, you know, I mean, as far as standing up to the police, having this meeting with bicycle riders was like the first time they took any sort of stand, you know, no matter how feeble it might have been,
but
against,
did they,
you know, the police.
But I thought that they simply said, you know, they told Tim, we'll do what you can, but give the police the money they want. Wasn't that the
vote? Basically that was the...
And then when Tim got into this meeting, which you attended on Monday morning, all he did was, nothing came out of that indicated any substantive, specific, written change in the grant. And, of course, in terms of the public process, it's outrageous that you can't see the grant the day after it was in there. I mean, it seems like it's, you know, I don't understand why that can't be. They got the grant up on the Internet several days later. I guess they got it up late.
Right, because it was at the Tuesday meeting that they talked about it, so everyone was expecting it the next day. And
that was last Tuesday, a week ago Tuesday.
Right, and then all of a sudden, when they first were talking about it, they were saying, people could write written responses, you know, said on the, I don't know where, but I guess people had been emailing Leslie Cook and the city clerk and also Sergeant Bailey, and they were saying, people can send in comments either by email or fax or letter up until Friday at 5.
That was last Friday.
Right, and the document wasn't available on email, on the city's website until just before 5 on Thursday.
So they had to extend it till Monday, the written comments.
Right, they extended the written comments.
But it's all smoke and mirrors, because it sounds like, just like the city council, they want to give the appearance of paying some attention to the biking community, but in substance, they aren't. I mean, am I too cynical here?
Well, I mean, they were willing to sit down and talk to people, so that was,
But sitting down and talking to people when you're not willing to change the grant
seems
to me to be damage control.
The whole thing is, I don't know whether anything the people were asking for actually got changed or not. You know, whether when the grant talked about enforcement, whether they inserted the word automobiles, you know, unsafe automobile drivers would be targeted by this too, you know, but because that wasn't part of the original grant. The original grant just said pedestrians and bicycles, you know, about the enforcement thing. And so, you know, part of it is they're going to put up, you know, set up on certain intersections around town 8 different times during the next 2 years or something like that, and write massive numbers of tickets to people. You know, just for one day, for 8 hours, they're just going to set up somewhere and do this. And so we were saying, you know, you've got to make the automobiles part of this. You can't just sit there and write tickets to bicycles and pedestrians for 8 hours. But that sounds like that's what they originally intended to do.
Well, I hope that you can get back to us on Sunday. I guess tomorrow is the last day of the week, so who knows? They may still have nothing about this great public process open grant that they're supposed to be having taken input on and responded to bicyclists about. I didn't hear one bicyclist supporting that grant in any clear way. I think they were saying that, first of all, the money should go to local bicycle groups. It shouldn't be it should go to they shouldn't be going to the salaries of police officers that we're going to have to support later on without a real change in police policy.
Right.
I mean, did you hear anybody support the grant as it was proposed?
No. No. Nobody that showed up. There was one letter in the agenda packet.
And how many people spoke?
I think there was 7 or 8.
And so what you have is you have Mayor Fitzmaurice doing his usual number of soft soaping. Perhaps with the most anguished good intentions, the community that he likes to appear as the good guy before, but in fact giving them nothing. Maybe he'll prove me wrong, and I'll apologize, and I'll commend him, because I think that people who stand up for the police department need to be commended, even the mayor. It's a hard thing to do, the mayor.
I mean, because that was part of what happened at this meeting, is that, you know, people would... bicycle riders that were there would say, you know, they wanted a certain thing, like, well, we want cars to be included in the enforcement. And the chief and Sergeant Bailey said, oh, well, you know, we're going to do the enforcement with cars. Well, we want it written in there. And, you know, they were just totally hemming and hawing at it. And then, like, Tim would say, well, I have to have a meeting with them in another day or two about this anyway before they submit it. I'll take care of that, you know. Tim kept on saying that he would take care of these things, so that's why I'm so interested in seeing what the final product is, to see if any of this stuff got inserted in there.
Gotcha. Well, I'll hope to hear the update from you when you get the word, and we'll pass it on Sunday, or maybe next Thursday, or maybe next year sometime, whenever they give it to us.
Right.
Any other reports you want to bring forward?
Nothing right now, except that... you know, there's always something going on here. The city and the county are always up to something, and so...
Keep your eyes open.
Yeah, anybody that's out there that wants to get involved should, because, you know, unless they get involved, the city and the county are just going to keep on doing the shit they're doing. And the more people that get active, the more control we're going to have over our own destinies.
You got it. Thank you for being involved, Scott.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
It sounds like dead air, but what it actually is the phonograph acting up. We're going to have to tell the phonograph it cannot act up. And there we go.
We didn't know, said the Burgomeister, about the camp on the edge of town. It was Hitler and his crew that tore the German nation down. We saw the cattle cars, it's true, maybe they carried a Jew or two. They woke us up as they rattled through, but what did you expect me to do? We didn't know it all, we didn't see a thing. You can't hold us to blame, what could we do?
It was a terrible shame, but we can't bear the blame. Oh no, not us, we didn't know. We didn't know, said the congregation, singing a hymn in their church of whites. The press was full of lies about us. Preacher told us we were right. The outside agitators came. They burned some churches and put the blame on decent Southern people's name to set our colored people aflame. And maybe some of our boys got hot and a couple of niggers and reds got shot. They should have stayed where they belong. A preacher would have told us if we'd done wrong. We didn't know at all. We didn't see a thing. You can't hold us to blame. What could we do? It was a terrible shame, but we can't bear the blame. Oh no, not us, we didn't know. We didn't know, said the puzzled voter, watching the president on TV. I guess we got to drop those bombs if we're gonna keep South Asia free. The president's such a peaceful man, I guess he's got some kind of plan. They say we're torturing prisoners of war, but I don't believe that stuff no more. Torturing prisoners is a communist game, and you can bet they're doing the same. I wish this war was over and through, but what do you expect me to do? We didn't know it all. We didn't see a thing. You can't hold us to blame. What could we do? It was a terrible shame, but we can't bear the blame. Oh no, not us, we didn't know.
Another Tom Paxton number, We Didn't Know, from the fine album Ain't That News. And here's a story from Los Angeles. Unknown to the 100,000 people who passed through the turnstiles at Sunday's Super Bowl, hidden cameras scanned each of their faces and compared the portraits with photos of terrorists and known criminals of every stripe. In a command post at Raymond James Stadium in Tampa, Florida, the digitized images of fans and workers were cross-checked against files of local police, the FBI, and state agencies at a rate of 1 million images a minute. The cameras identified 19 people with criminal histories, none of them of a significant nature, Tampa authorities said, but the undisclosed first test of the technology at a major U.S. sporting event raised arguments about privacy versus security and questions about the future of such spying and its uses. Oh my God, it's yet another nail in the coffin of personal liberty, said Bruce Schneier, founder and chief technical officer of Countermain Internet Security, Inc., a security monitoring company. It's another manifestation of a surveillance society which says we're going to watch you all the time just in case you might do something wrong, said Schneier, whose book, Secrets and Lies, Digital Security in a Networked World, warned of the increasing encroachment on civil liberties in high-tech society. But UCS law professor Aaron Chirinsky, a nationally recognized authority on constitutional law, said the right to privacy doesn't extend to places quite so public. I'm troubled by the extensive use of cameras to monitor us when we're in public places, but that doesn't mean it's illegal or unconstitutional, Chenerinsky said. People have no reasonable expectation that when out in public they cannot be photographed. Tampa police spokesman Joe Durkin said the department jumped at the chance to borrow the technology after Graphco Technologies, Inc. approached it and allowed it to try out for free. It's just another high-tech tool that is available, Durkin said. We used it for a week to test it, evaluate it, and see if we liked it. And yes, we did like it, very much so. Durkin said the department wanted a screen for pickpockets and other potential scam artists drawn to the huge event, and for potential terrorists who wanted to use its worldwide TV and radio audience to make a political statement. Clearly, the vast majority of citizens would applaud our efforts to make Super Bowl 35 as safe as we did, he said. And I'll tell you, had this system identified some known terrorist because of the size of the event and the eyes of the world on Tampa, and the police stopped the terrorist act, the system would have proved priceless. No arrests were made that day, but Durkin said it alerted us that they were there. It confirmed our suspicions a crowd of this magnitude would attract people trying to take advantage of the situation. Oakland Raiders senior assistant Bruce Allen agreed with the need. Whatever they want to do to protect this country, I'm for, so anything we can do to help. I can't imagine anyone disagreeing with that. Critics, however, warn of the potential for error. What if I had the same shaped nose as John Dillinger? Am I going to get frisked? Asked Clifford Stoll, author of books questioning the applications of technology and their benefits to society. Although advocates insist that such technologies are reliable, he added, that's what J. Edgar Hoover said when he measured the head shape of criminals to determine the standard appearance of a criminal. Other applications are expected to include ATM machines and public events such as the 2002 Winter Olympics in Salt Lake City. The popularity of facial recognition technology is also spreading in Las Vegas, where a growing number of casinos employ it to identify criminal suspects or unwanted gamblers, including card counters and those listed in the Black Book of banned casino guests. But not everyone who enters a casino where eye-in-the-sky surveillance cameras are a long-accepted feature is automatically photographed, according to the corporate spokesman for three of Las Vegas's largest casinos using the technology. Rather, a person is photographed and his facial features scanned only if he or she is suspected of being a criminal or otherwise unwanted in the casino, said Alan Feldman, vice president of MGM Mirage. What happened at Sunday's Super Bowl, however, signals a revolution in spying technology with possibly grave implications, Schneier said. That's from the LA Times story. Secret cameras scanned crowd at Super Bowl for criminals. And here's another story. Strong profiling proposal in the works. This is in Michigan. Police expected to fight plan to log race data. Before I get into the story, I want to point out we have cameras on the mall, particularly in areas where they are trying to deter groups of people that are considered undesirable, such as in front of New Leaf Market, which I regard as shameful and abusive and also discriminatory to a particular class of people, poor people and young people and homeless people. It'd be nice if people called the city council and at 420-5017 and registered their nausea at this situation, just as they should call city council at 420-5017 and tell them to end the sleeping ban and stop the massive appropriations for police and the attacks on bicyclists and the discriminatory treatment that bicyclists get when they get hit by the motorists. The motorist walks away. When the bicyclist goes the wrong way, she gets, apparently, according to two witnesses, either slapped or shoved, thrown in the squad car, and arrested. And again, that happened within these incidents happened within a day of each other and six blocks of each other 2 weeks ago. Here's this second story. Strong profiling proposal in works. Police expected to fight plan to log race data by Amber Arellano. This is from Ann Arbor Free Press. Michigan would have one of the nation's strongest racial profiling laws if the legislature passes a proposal to be introduced this month, but police organizations are expected to mount stiff opposition. Under the measure being drafted by State Representative Buzz Thomas, Democrat of Detroit, police would be required to track the race or ethnicity of drivers they stop and search and to report the data to the Michigan Attorney General. State funding would help with the cost. The proposal also calls for the creation of an Attorney General's division to investigate questionable police practices and to discipline departments deemed guilty of profiling. Profiling, of course, means stopping someone because of the color of their skin or the fact that they look homeless, something like that. This month, the ACLU of Michigan and the Detroit branch of the NAACP will join Thomas and other black lawmakers to campaign for passage. Leaders plan to travel around the state to convince Michiganders in predominantly white areas and their legislators to support the bill. Perhaps the most controversial part of the proposal is the requirement about recording race and ethnicity. Though a handful of departments statewide have begun to do so on their own, most resist the idea. Similarly in California. Several states, including Missouri, North Carolina, and Connecticut, require police to track the race of motorists they stop. Thomas said he is developing his bill by culling the strongest parts of other states' legislation. The powerful Michigan Association of Chiefs of Police voted to denounce mandatory race collection last year and squash Thomas's effort to propose a bill then. Farmington Hills Police Chief William Dwyer, president of the MACP, the Michigan Association of Chiefs of Police, said Wednesday that such data could be falsely interpreted and won't help departments solve the problem of profiling. Dwyer favors more rigorous training of officers. Carrie Moss, executive director of the ACLU, said outside consultants trusted by all parties concerned about profiling, including police, minorities, and civil rights leaders, would be tapped to interpret the data. And hang on for just a second. Quickly checking my taping here and returning to the story from the Free Press. We're not looking to unfairly bash anybody, Moss said Wednesday, but we want more information about the extent of the problem. The data tell you whether or not you need to look harder to see if the problem is a result of widespread policy or if it's just a couple of untrained officers. It's certainly better than hiding your head in the sand, which doesn't help anybody, and it certainly doesn't better community police relationships. Thomas's bill also would make it possible for Michiganders to sue over racial profiling, though that is already possible under the U.S. Constitution and federal civil rights laws. A spokesperson for Michigan Attorney General Jennifer Granholm, who under the bill would help determine the disciplinary action against departments guilty of profiling, did not return a call on Wednesday. Law enforcement lobbyists have strong pull in Lansing and likely will fight the bill, but more police departments have become open to data collection in recent months. The Michigan State Police, among others, is doing so voluntarily, and the department will release its first year-long report on race and traffic stops this month. On February 12th, the Lansing Police Department will begin collecting data by the race, gender, and age of drivers, the reason for the stop, and whether a ticket was issued. Whether it be law enforcement or in your personal life, we all make judgments based on people's appearances, period, Lansing Police Chief Mark Alley said Wednesday. A lot of this is done unconsciously. You don't even know you're doing it. Data collection, he said, will definitely make people more conscious. Automatically, whenever you have someone fill out information about what they do, they become more conscious. Meanwhile, in the legislature, a record 17 black lawmakers now serve in the House behind House Minority Leader Kwame Kilpatrick, Democrat of Detroit, the first black person elected to lead a political party in the legislature. Thomas said that that fact, plus a growing number of Republicans concerned about profiling, will help the bill get passed eventually. We tried to pass a similar bill, of course, in California. It was vetoed by Gray Davis in favor, I think, of business cards, or I think even that part of the bill may have been stopped. We don't have the mandated documentation we need, even in Santa Cruz. We've tried to get the Citizens Police Rah-Rah Board, or the Review Board, as they sometimes style themselves, or as they're in fact called by the city, to support requiring Police Chief Belcher and the Santa Cruz Police Department to record the racial and ethnic characteristics, and I would say also the economic characteristics of people they stop. Do they look homeless? And in doing so, get some indication of whether there's disproportionate focus on people of a different color or a different economic class. We know there is, of course, no question about it, but let's get the documentation and let's try to put some pressure in the other direction. Now, I have heard a positive statement about this at the Homeless Working Group. Michael Schmidt, who is attending as a private citizen, spoke up about he's going to the Citizen Police Academy, which any citizen can do. It's a series of ride-alongs. And apparently, Police Chief Belcher has announced that he is going to have equipment ready, perhaps by April, if I'm not mistaken, that will enable the public to go into the police department and get information about any particular stop by a police officer in terms of that kind of status, that kind of information. I may be misunderstanding this, and I don't want to confirm it until I really get this clear, but there may be something in the works. The police department has been promising the Citizens Police Review Board for years that they would do something without a mandatory requirement. They've been pleading software problems up to now. Let's hope they get past those software problems. Again, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM here in Santa Cruz. Call-in number for the station is 427-3772. About 3 or 4 weeks ago, a man named Chaim Levin, who is a Philadelphia... Do I have it right? No, he's in New Jersey. My goodness, I'm trying to remember where this guy is from. I think he's Maryland? Help! Anyway, he's in one of these East Coast states, and... I may be getting a call from my producer to jog my memory momentarily. But, yes, this could be... hang on.
Help, hello?
Baltimore, Maryland.
Ah, yes, I knew it was one of those little states.
Okay.
Thank you.
Chaim Levin, who's a rabbi, was engaging in a protest against the... Well, he was feeding people, and the city tried to shut him down, and he, in essence... kept feeding people, and the city had to back down. Chaim Levin also acquired some fame in my eyes by responding to our concerns about the sleeping ban, writing a letter to Tim Fitzmaurice, which we spoke about on the air. Fitzmaurice went through a recitation of all the wonderful things that he and the city was doing for the homeless, other than allowing them to sleep or allowing them any kind of adequate shelter or decriminalization. But he talked about getting an extra hour for the armory and providing snacks last year, and you know these great accomplishments of the Fitzmaurice regime. And Levin reminded him of his religious responsibilities, because Tim often has sort of a religious, I don't want to say imposture. I think Tim believes he is a religious, a spiritual fellow. He believes he's trying to meet his responsibilities that way. But even though he's got the votes to decriminalize sleeping for the homeless, he is afraid to bring up the issue because the political priorities in the end become more important, or possibly his religious priorities simply exclude a whole class of people. It's a little difficult to tell. Anyway, we got Reverend Chaim Levin on the phone, and we interviewed him, and we're going to play a bit of this interview now. It's a rather long interview, so we can't play all of it. We've only got 20 minutes left in the show. We're going to play some of it, and we will be returning on Sunday from 11 to 1:30 in the afternoon, and there'll be more of that, plus another interview from Portland, Oregon, of an attorney up there talking about the famous Gallagher decision, the decision that overturned the Portland camping ban. Even though they're continuing to harass homeless people for jaywalking, breathing without a permit, and other ridiculous things, the actual camping ordinance was overturned. We're going to get an interview with, I believe her name is Mickey Ryan, up there when we come back.